Welcome to the Hospitality Mentor Podcast. I'm your host, Steve Turk. Join me as we dive into the personal stories of some of the world's best hospitality professionals. We follow the journey of their ups, downs, and wild turns to find out what it truly takes to make it in the amazing world of hospitality.
Here's something I've learned after years in hospitality. The best operators are incredibly intentional about how they use their time. Because when your day is filled with manual tasks like updating calendars, responding to repetitive guest messages, or managing payments, you're not focusing on leadership or growth. That's why tools like Logify exist. Logify is an all-in-one platform that helps hospitality operators manage short-term rental properties more efficiently. It keeps your calendars synced across booking platforms, automates guest communication, processes payments, and even lets you create your own direct booking website. So instead of juggling multiple systems, everything lives in one place. And what I love about that is simple. It gives you your time back, which is one of your most valuable resources in hospitality. If you want to check it out, Hospitality Mentor listeners and viewers can get 60% off of Logify's yearly and bi-yearly professional and ultimate plans with the code THM60. And that's THM60. Now, back to the episode. Welcome to another episode of the Hospitality Mentor Podcast. Listeners and viewers, I'm very excited today. We got Mario Del Duca, Managing Director of Nuba, with us today. Mario, thanks for joining.
Hey, Steve. Good to be here. Thanks for your time.
Absolutely. Well, Mario, first, what I want to do, usually we jump right in, but I want you to explain what Nuba is. Maybe give us like the 30-second download on what it is. And while you're doing that, I want listeners and viewers to check it out as well. So tell us about Nuba. What is it?
Okay, Steve. Yeah, Nuba is a 30-plus-year-old company, new to this part of the world. It's a Spanish company set up in the mid-90s. Luxury travel company focused on outbound high-end leisure. Originally high-end outbound leisure from Spain, from Southern Europe, with clients going all over the world. 7 years ago, it entered the Americas region with a couple of acquisitions in Mexico, which has been very successful business. Been in the US 3 or 4 years now with an office here in Miami. I manage all of the Americas business. And as well as our outbound business, we're also becoming more and more well-known in the North American market, as we have a great boutique DMC in Mexico, as well as one in Spain. We have 100-plus ICs in the region, growing presence in the US, a great local team here. We're the largest luxury travel producer for most of the big hotel names out of Latin America. Also a member of Virtuoso. And we're growing our presence in the US and in other markets across Latin America as well.
I'm excited to hear about the growth coming up, but I want listeners and viewers, if you haven't yet, check out Nuba.com, N-U-B-A.com. You can see everything Mario was just talking about and all the things that they're up to. And we'll talk more about what you're excited about towards the end of this journey. But I want to learn how you got into this role, because you are different than a lot of the people that we have on here. You're in the travel space, you're in the hospitality space, but you didn't start out in hospitality, or did you? What was your first job in the hospitality space?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, I've got not a very orthodox career in the past or not an orthodox path in terms of getting here. I was originally a banker in London, then New York for several years, realized that I didn't want to work in a huge corporation, left, burnt all bridges, as they say, and went to get my MBA. Then life took me to Mexico. I set up a couple of businesses there. So I had a several year streak as an entrepreneur, setting up a couple of businesses. My passion was always travel. Perhaps I didn't realize that earlier in my career, early in my life. But I was fortunate enough that the businesses that I had set up were, you know, after 3 or 4 years, started to become quite successful. Before it became a fashionable thing to do, my wife and I decided that before starting a family, we wanted to travel the world as much as we could. And that's what we started doing. And we were essentially managing businesses remotely. Like I said, before it was fashionable, before a pandemic or anything like that. Everyone called, we were pretty strange, pretty weird doing things like that, but it worked out for us. So this passion for travel developed, and it got to the point where we became quite well known in the early days of Instagram because of our, you know, our photography. There weren't that many people doing what we were doing at the time, traveling around the world, staying in nice places, taking great photos. So we had hotels started reaching out to us and say, hey, come and stay at our hotel and photos. We're like, okay, sounds like a good deal. Yeah. Sounds like a good gig. We started doing that just as a side thing, really. And then we were approached to become ICs, which we had absolutely no idea what they were talking about.
What is an IC? I don't know what it is.
That. The original response was, sounds interesting. Yeah, definitely a passion for travel. But had a lot of things on the go at the time in terms of business. So we declined at that point. But a couple of years later, when we moved to Miami, had a little bit more time, and it was something started exploring, and that came to fruition. That agency was a few months later was bought out by Nuba, developed a relationship with the ownership, and after a couple of years, the owner said, you know, we built a pretty good relationship. He was also banking and finance background. We had a lot of things in common, and asked me to run the business in the Americas, and that was over four years ago. So I've been running Nuba in the Americas for just over 4 years. And in that time we've almost tripled the size of the business. So it's been an interesting ride, definitely not an orthodox way to get here. I think what I always say to people, it's, you know, I think we all have passions. Sometimes we don't necessarily follow that passion when it comes to business or when it comes to our careers, but there can be cases, I think like mine, where you can find a way to combine a passion with a business. And it's, you know, I always say to people, it's, you know, we're privileged and honored to be in this industry. It's an ever evolving industry. There's so much going on. It's very relationship based. There's no one day like another. And that's definitely suited my profile. And it's very different from how it was in my banking days in London and New York, where it's all very regimented, all quite political, quite bureaucratic. So that's definitely something that's been a positive and a driver for me in this industry and in this business today, specifically in Nuba.
And so I want to rewind, because you unpacked a lot there, and I want to kind of go on this journey because you gave us so much. Is, you know, there's a lot of people that listen to this and like, man, you know, I'm in this job, I've been doing this for 7, 8, 9 years, 10 years, and you don't have to start all the way over. What was that kind of decision for you? Because you were in banking for a lot of years. You were there, you know, almost 8, 9 years in that world. Was there like a moment that you were just like, yeah, this is not it? Were you just sitting at the desk? Do you remember that moment? Or was it just like, I got to get out of here? What was that moment for you?
Okay. I'm going to assume that none of my ex-bosses or my bosses listen to your podcast.
Anyway, I might send it to them after. Who knows? It doesn't have to be derogatory. Maybe there was something that just clicked for you.
No, to be completely honest, I mean, I had a great career in banking. I was an expat in New York at a great time, just before the crash of the 2008-2009. It was an amazing time to be in New York. It was an amazing time to be in banking. Definitely also there were a lot of perks. It's not easy in terms of the amount of hours you dedicate to it. But I have to say, it's, you're working in banking or even working at a big corporation, it's a great training route. No matter what you want to do in life, what you want to do in your career, or whichever industry you end up in. So it was, I definitely had a good time. I definitely learned a lot, but I did like look around and say, okay, thinking long-term, do I really want to be in a big, you know, 100,000 plus employee organization? You know, very, very complex. And my decision, you know, when I always wanted to get an MBA, and I think I saw that as a bridge to something else, which at the time I did not know what that something else was. And if the MBA was something I'd been exploring for 2 or 3 years, I decided, okay, 2000, I left in 2009, so just after the real estate crisis. And I remember very, very clearly the head of HR of the one I was saying, are you sure? Is this a good time? You know, your things are going well for you in your career. And I was just very determined that, despite the fact that I was on a good path, and I was looking after all of the oil and gas portfolio for our bank in North America. I was having quite a bit for work, and it was an important responsibility. But I came to the conclusion that it was perhaps not my passion, and it was not where I wanted to be long term. And that's why, like I said, I burnt all bridges, in the sense that I did not know where I was going to end up. But I decided to resign from banking, signed up for the MBA, and that's what I did. Went off to Spain. I went to
a great school on focused on entrepreneurship in Madrid called IE Business School. It is Tuto Empresa or IE University today. And that's how I left banking, and that's how I burned those bridges. And that opened a lot of doors for me. There is a great network that I developed in during my MBA. And Madrid was an absolutely fantastic place to live in at the time. So yeah. But like I said, I highly recommend working in a big corporate at some point in your career, especially early in your career, because it's, even if you don't know where you want to be long term, or you're not 100% sure if you can combine a passion with your work, it is a fantastic training ground. So whether that's banking, insurance, the legal field, many other businesses, big companies, they do have great training programs. And that's something that I'm very grateful for.
That's great. And so did your family and friends say you were crazy at that time? Was everyone telling you that other than HR? Or were they like, no, listen, Mario, you're meant for more. You have that entrepreneurial itch, because I see you've always been doing something. Even before banking, like, you've always had a little business going, it looks like.
Yeah, absolutely.
Got in your mind?
Yeah, I mean, I guess even from a very young age, I was always quite entrepreneurial. And I think that I learned to adapt to different situations, different countries, different cultures from an early time. And yeah, so I always have had the sort of that entrepreneurial streak. And I think a lot of my family and my friends were conscious of that, and they knew that I wasn't going to be in any one thing for a whole career, right? For a whole lifetime. So yeah, and there were some comments like that. They came more from perhaps less than family and friends, and more from people within within banking. But I hope that if they look to see how things have evolved for me now, they say, okay, he made the right call, and looks like things are working out for him.
Yeah. So for listeners, if you're not watching this on YouTube, you can see Mario looks very relaxed. He's tan. I'm not sure a lot of his for banker friends are looking the same now these days. But Mario, so you go to IE, you're in Madrid, you get your MBA. How do you end up in Mexico from there? How does that start happening? Because that's a very different path than London or New York or even Miami. How did you get down there?
Well, I mean, while I was living in New York, I met a young lady from Mexico, originally from Mexico, who was always also working in New York at the time. So we started dating there, and we actually met because we were both studying the GMAT, which is the exam you need to take to get into a good business school. And that's how we met, and we connected over that. So when I went to Madrid to get my, and she's of Mexican origin. When I went to get my MBA in Madrid, she went to Barcelona to get her MBA. So we were sort of long distance dating for a while we were getting our MBAs, and we moved to Mexico as soon as we finished our MBAs, got married, and then I started looking around, saying, okay, what am I going to do with my life now? And that's how it started.
Well, that's awesome. All right, so you get to Mexico, you start a couple of businesses. I want to fast forward a little bit, because the part where you say you decide to travel around the world for, was it a year or more?
Yeah, we've been getting married for a year and a half, 2 years or so.
So how does that happen?
4 years in.
Yeah, how does that happen? So a lot of people having that dream. You see a lot of people, the digital nomads, and they have side hustles and businesses and things like that they can do from anywhere. But how did you start to decide to do that before it was really the thing to do?
Yeah, I guess from the time we started dating in New York, we realized we also had this passion for travel, and we started traveling together, just short haul things. Then when we moved to Mexico, I set up the first business was a importer and distributor of professional beauty products. So very different from anything I've done before or anything I've done since. So we put together a great business case, started working with a couple of brands in the US. We were selling to hotel spas and to high-end beauty salons around Mexico and eventually around the rest of Latin America. And we said at the beginning, okay, long term, maybe we don't want to live in Mexico. You know, my wife's got, she's American, so she's got American nationality. So we knew that long term, perhaps we weren't going to be living, or we didn't want to live in Mexico, despite the fact that it's an absolutely awesome place. We always had the idea that we would move to the US at some point. And like, as is very common in business, you assume that things, you know, you put together a plan and you assume that in 6 months you're going to be at a certain place, but that 6 months becomes 3 or 4 years. Things always take a lot longer than you expect. And it took us, we built a team, we built a distribution network, we built a clientele. But it was only 3 or 4 years in, we said, okay, the business is, it's going well, it's more or less how we would we would like to be running for us to be less less involved or less having to be less present physically on a day-to-day basis, and said, okay, before we start a family, let's do what we've always said and travel as much as we can. And that's what we started doing for 4 years in. I think that was around 2014. And we said, okay, let's go away for a month. The original plan was to do 12 months, so a month in 12 different cities around the world, or 12 different places around the world. And I remember actually the first place we went to was Miami. So okay, we came here for a month.
Oh, nice.
Then we went back because I checked with the team that everything was working okay. Okay, tweaked what we had to tweak. And then 2-3 weeks later, we would head off somewhere else. And I think we went to Kuala Lumpur was the second one. Then after 3 or 4 months of doing that, I said, okay, rather than doing a month in each of these in different places around the world, there are so many cool places. Let's just go somewhere and from there start traveling around. And that's what we started doing. We did that for a year and a half, 2 years. We would travel back in to Mexico, check that everything was okay. Our team got used to it. Our families and friends got used to it. People would start. I said, hey, you guys are traveling so much. Give me some recommendations. Where would you stay? What would you do? And we were recommending to our friends or things to do, places to stay. And we started developing reputation for, I guess, knowing what we were talking about. We also started realizing that we had a real passion for traveling, for exploring different cultures, meeting different people from different parts of the world. We also liked, to be frank, we liked staying in nice places. And so, I think that was a great, and we were, like I said earlier, we were taking, I think, great pictures at the time. Which I think if you look at Instagram today, I mean, the quality has definitely got to a different level in general on social media. But at the time, we were taking great photography and it's people liked what we were doing and we were getting approached by hotels, by different entities that were on social media. So that was great. That was great from getting to know the world, getting to know luxury hospitality, getting to know people in the industry. I mean, there are people I speak to frequently today who are on the, maybe on the sales side or TMs who knew me, knew us when we had absolutely nothing to do with the industry from an agency. So that was a great, great stage in our lives. And like I said, it helped to develop this passion, which is still there today. It's just, I guess we'd never imagined that it would take us to, take us to where we are and what we're doing today.
Yeah. So how did you transition that? You're getting these messages from the hotels, and that's early days. So if they're messaging you in 2014 and 2015, those were like forward thinking hoteliers that were like, hey, let's get these people to take some photos and barter and give us those things. It's kind of similar to this podcast. We were talking backstage. Like I just started it out of necessity, and then I have sponsors and invitations to speak places. You never know where it goes, but how did you then transition? Like, all right, there's something here. Let's start doing luxury travel advising. When did that moment start?
Yeah. I think at the time, it was very early in the days of social media. And I guess if we want to call it that way, influencers or influencing. And I think that a lot of companies in the sector knew that this was an up and coming thing, but they didn't have a way to really measure the ROI on marketing, on social media, and on influencers. So I think a lot of them were going out there saying, okay, who's taking some great photography? Who's got a great following? Whose imagery and messaging resonates with what our property is and what it's about? So they would reach out without necessarily having a KPI on return on investment. So, and they weren't, I don't think that they weren't essentially looking at ROI at the time. Because it was just something that was extremely difficult to measure. Yeah. So that's where we were at, and we were developing these relationships in the sector. We realized we had the passion, and I think it was just circumstantial, really, that we got into the luxury travel space from a selling perspective. I guess if it had not been for people reaching out, maybe we wouldn't have ended up in the sector. Maybe I wouldn't be here to be fair. So I'm grateful that happened. And I had absolutely zero idea of this sector was about when it came to selling it. And who sells it? Who's involved? How do they do it? What tools do they use? didn't have any idea whatsoever about it. So it's something that once we got involved and we got into the original agency, something we learned, it was something on the side, still had the, you know, had the other businesses going on. So it was something that was a side gig, initially selling to, you know, friends, family, friends of friends, and building a reputation that way, getting to learn how you build an itinerary, getting to learn how you can incorporate things that you've seen around the world that you're passionate about, getting to learn how to develop those relationships as well around the world. So that's what I did. And I did not expect, for example, then within a few months, the company to be bought out by Nuba, developing new relationships with them and that company. It was a very unknown name in the Americas at the time, and for it to develop the way it's developed.
It's amazing. So let's talk about Nuba, because for a moment, I want to tell listeners, because I want to hear your point of view before we talk about Nuba. So for a moment in time, 2 years ago, I was a Fora advisor and I was like trying to book people travel. I was like, oh my God, this is not for me. Like, they're calling me because their plane is delayed and they don't know about the room and X, Y. I was like, no, this is not going to be for me. I'm building a company, but it takes a certain type of mentality to be in your role. Did that ever get to you? Because coming from the world of banking and then entrepreneurship and then planning travel, there's a lot that happens when you're starting to put together someone's dream trip that they're spending thousands of dollars on, or tens of thousands of dollars in luxury space. Absolutely. What was that? Do you remember maybe the first time that happened to you? Because it hit me and I was like, all right, I'm not getting calls at 1 a.m. We're going to be moving up. So
when I didn't help you. It happened, I guess, several times. Where when today I'm also have a small portfolio of clients, you know, of nice clients that I look after with my team. But at the time, I was, you know, as part of this side gig as an IC, I was very dedicated to clients and growing the client base. I think the difference is there's two things I would mention. Is that one is that it doesn't matter what industry you're in. You know, I guess from a young age, I knew the importance of clients, the importance of service, clients are giving the best possible service to clients, whatever industry you're in. I think that's the core of what anyone does when they're in a sales role or when they're in a business or running a business, right? I think the difference here is that in this industry, there are so many moving parts and there are things that are out of your control, right? And so, but despite the fact that they're out of your control, if something goes wrong, you're still expected and you still have to get involved and look to solve it. And one way that you can really develop a relationship with a client and that you can really look good when it comes to a client is when something goes wrong. You know, especially when something goes wrong that's out of your control, if you come out of it looking good by solving the problem for your client, despite the fact that it was not something that was caused by you, you know, it could have been caused by an airline, could have been caused by weather, could have been caused by a lot of different things, but you're expected to get involved and help sort it out. And I think that's, you can't just say, hey, it's provide the airline, it was caused, whatever it is, and walk away from it. You that is not something you can do for a client, and it's not something you can do when it comes to service and or anything related to the hospitality industry. So I think that is something that's different in terms of the amount of moving parts and having to get involved and roll your sleeves up, whatever the situation. But if you learn to do that well and to learn to react well, and sometimes even to control emotions and control the fact that you can, you know, it can be Christmas Day, it can be New Year's Day, it can be in the middle of the night, it can be a weekend. You can't control that. And sometimes as an advisor, that's a reality of the business. On the flip side, of course, there are a lot of, There are perks. You can manage your time. I think you can perhaps have a good work life balance if you're able to manage your work in certain times of the day or certain days of the week, and you're able to also be flexible in terms of where you work from. That I think that's the plus side. So yeah, we're always balancing that when we're in the industry. We can be working very hard. But we can be working very hard from part of the world that we prefer to be in, and rather than be at a desk in an office in our hometown, right? So it's pros and cons.
I agree with you. I have this conversation a lot with people coming into the hospitality industry. I say, this is not a career. This is a lifestyle. And you have to like the lifestyle because it's all day, every day, especially if you're in the management side or operating or in the travel side too. You just never know. It could be good days and crazy days. And then other days are nice and easy. You never know.
Absolutely. And the other thing there is as well, it's important to be disciplined. So that if you are working from different parts of the world, and like I said, I learned to do this very early in my career, but if you are working from different parts of the world and traveling around and you're remote, you're virtual, and you're in a completely different time zone, it's important to be very disciplined. Because it's easy to say, hey, I'm on the other side of the world, I'm by a nice beach or whatever, staying in a nice place, I'm in a different time zone. You need to be able to be, you need to learn to be flexible and to adapt no matter where you are in the world, because the client always comes first and the expectation of service is the same no matter where you are in the world. So and that also is not easy for people to manage. So I think the one thing I've learned is that I get to travel a lot and I'm in different time zones. So this week I'm here, next week I'll be in Europe, maybe in a month's time I'm in Asia because work takes me there. But learning to adapt and be flexible, no matter the time zone, no matter the geography, because again, your team, when you're in my role, your clients, the relationships you have around the industry, they expect you to be, I don't want to call it on call, but they expect you to give the same level of service no matter where you're at.
Yeah, and that's good advice, especially this year is the most I've ever traveled. And it's not all that much, but 20 different flights in a year to different Europe and across the country. And there's different time zones. I'm having dinner in one time zone when as people are waking up in another and they're expecting things. And I have a glass of wine in my hand. I'm like, okay, let's figure out what we're going to do here. It can be difficult, but I think that's great advice for anyone listening. But I want to fast forward now to Nuba. So we talk about kind of your journey there and how Nuba purchased the company and you've grown within it. Who is a Nuba client? Who is calling Nuba? Who's someone you're working with?
So we deal with high net worth, ultra high net worth clientele globally. A lot of our business is out of Latin America. We have a very established Spain business as well, but our Latin America business, which is in my region, is still our main revenue driver. So we're talking about high net worth, ultra high net worth individuals, families. Those are our typical clients. And a lot of them come to us via our IC network around the continent. The same in the US. Obviously, we have a significant number of Spanish-speaking clients because of our big Latin America presence. But that's been changing quite a bit, I would say, over the last year and a half. We're seeing more and more clients coming to us from the US and other parts of the world who have absolutely no connection whatsoever either to Latin America, Spain, or the Spanish-speaking world. So that's been great for us. And obviously, that means we've had to adapt in terms of the type of people we attract and the type of people we have on the team. It also means we've had to adapt in terms of, even operational things like language and our systems and the way we present itineraries and ideas to our clients. But we also have a great boutique incentives team. So we work with some very well-known brands, especially from Latin America, who do one or two important trips, incentive trips for their top clients. We're talking about 60 to 100 people. We're not talking about huge groups. We're talking 60 to 100 people, one or two trips a year, a week to 10 days. Great business. And the great thing for us is that there's a lot of affinity with what we do on the leisure side, where they're staying in the same types of hotels, doing the same types of experience, just with a bigger group. And I think that what clients like from Nuba is the attention to detail that our advisors have, the tools that our advisors have that allow them to present something in a very attractive way, the experience they have. A lot of our advisors are traveling around the world constantly. Again, they've learned to adapt and they've learned to give that level of service wherever they are in the world. And I think that they're well known for knowing their stuff. Where's the latest hotel opening? What is the great little cafe in Paris or Rome that every client should go to? Constantly traveling, so they have this great experience, and they're always willing to share that with the rest of the team and with their clients. So I would say that our typical client is someone who's well-to-do, well-traveled, demanding, especially when they're Latin American clients. They're pretty demanding in terms of the level of service that they expect from us. And I think that's something that with regards to our US business, our clients like a lot, because I feel that our advisors go above and beyond what the market is generally used to. And they like that. And that's why our clients keep coming back and they keep recommending us to others. Most of our clients come to us because of word of mouth.
That's amazing. And so it is hard to find. Everyone wants a high net worth individual to be their clients. And it is a lot of competition in those spaces. But it sounds like the attention to detail is really what makes you stand out here. Are you curating certain trips for them? Are you saying, hey, do you want to have an adventure trip? Here's the adventure trip, or here's a relaxing spa trip, or are they coming to you with ideas? How are a lot of those things taking shape for you?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a combination of the two. I think from our perspective, the most important, whether the client has a clear idea of where they want to go, what they want to do, or they're just coming to us for ideas initially, and they want to design something based on the ideas that we bring to them. The most important part is really to profile your client, really understand your client. Who are they? Who are they traveling with? What drives them? Where have they been in the past? What their expectations are? You know, even little things like, well, I mean, I guess it's not a little thing, it's quite important, but you know, what kind of hotel have they stayed in the past? You know, what, you know, do they like contemporary? Do they like classic? Are they traveling because from a cultural perspective? Do they just want to stay in a great hotel and float around the city or wherever they are in the world? Or are they looking for more cultural immersion? Looking for the latest gastronomic experiences? Are they looking for experiences related to art and design? So there are a lot of different questions that advisors need to ask their clients. They need to then know their clients pretty intimately when it comes to designing the most appropriate trip for them. And I think that, you know, also thinking back to my banking days, in a lot of ways, this is similar to private banking. So client has a private banker or a lawyer that, you know, is part of their team of advisors they have. And the travel advisor, I think, has a very, very similar role today in terms of the interaction with their clients and really understanding what is the driver for how they make the decisions when it comes to travel. So that's how we see things. That's how I see things. And I think that's how we develop the relationship with the client is what is it that drives their needs or their wants to travel and to be able to design something, bring into play our experience, bring into play our connections, our relationships around the world, and the knowledge we have of different experiences that you can have, whether it relates to art, whether it relates to gastronomy, wellness, sustainability. There are a lot of different factors today, and I think there are a lot of facets to what a client is looking for when they travel. And so that's why that intimate relationship of travel advisor with clients has become similar to lawyer and client, private banker and client, and we see ourselves as fitting into that, being part of that team. And in a lot of cases, we actually interact with bankers or lawyers who have the same client.
I like that. That's a good mindset to have, and I'm hoping I can be your client here soon. I got like hit a couple more high net worth goals here. But I just went on a trip. I was talking with you earlier. You know, I went to Italy and I used technology to plan a lot of the trip. I used ChatGPT to kind of give me some ideas. And then while I was walking the streets, I forgot that I had Meta sunglasses, right? The Ray-Bans. And I was like, I'm walking through town here. You know, I'm on this street and this cross street. What should I be looking at? You know, say, hey, Meta, tell me where I should go. And it gave me a couple things, right? So there's technology now being used all over the place. How are you using it now? Do you see that as something that is going to help you a lot? Is it going to hinder you, you think? What do you think with AI and all the tech that's coming out now?
Great question, Steve. And it's something we're seeing more and more of. Definitely, there's a huge acceleration in terms of the amount of technology, or there's a huge acceleration specifically when it comes to AI. There is no doubt that the clients, everyone has a lot more access to information compared to what they had even 6 to 12 months ago. It's actually quite impressive how quickly this is changing. I mean, from our perspective is that, you know, we embrace technology. We think technology is very important. We also think that there's an overabundance of information out there. And sometimes the information is, you know, not correct, or it's not profiled to you. We think that human relationships, especially when it comes to the top end of the market, human relationships are not going to become less important over time. We think that they're going to become more important over time, specifically because of the abundance of technology and information there is. I think it's to really wade your way through so much information, to really understand what is appropriate for you and what is profiled for you is difficult, perhaps more difficult than ever today. Definitely if I'm looking for, you know, which are the latest openings of hotels, or what are which are the best Michelin-starred restaurants in Paris. That's information that anyone has access to and can go on ChatGPT and get to. However, my point of view, or our point of view on this, is that judgment, nuance, relationship is not something that can be easily replaced by technology. So I think the human element is as important, if not more important than ever. The fact that an advisor is constantly traveling, the fact that an advisor is constantly in touch with different people in the hospitality industry all day long, the fact that we have firsthand experience of great hotels, great experiences, great restaurants, whatever it might be, different parts of the world, that is not something that a AI or a robot technology can replace today, tomorrow, or and hopefully ever. No doubt AI will continue to improve. No doubt there will be a lot of evolutions to how things are done in this industry and how people can book. But I do strongly believe that, especially at the top end of the market, the human element, the interaction, the knowledge will become more and more important over time rather than less important. And we are definitely ourselves, we're investing quite a bit of money into technology. We're investing quite a bit of money into AI. But in no cases that technology, are we thinking that technology will replace an advisor. What we're looking for is how can technology complement all of those incredible things that an advisor has in terms of their experience and in terms of their knowledge, so that they can be perhaps more efficient in how they operate and more efficient in how they build an itinerary, have more information to hand about information that is, you know, if I have 100 advisors who are extremely well-traveled, how can I pull the information on their knowledge for the benefit of the rest of the team? And how can I do that using technology? And we're also looking at back office tools, AI related tools to help our back office and our operation. And everything is about how do we make our advisors better and more efficient so they can spend more time with their clients, more time advising their clients and getting to know their clients better. So, because we strongly believe that the human elements and relationships are going to continue to be extremely important for the foreseeable future.
I love the way you think, and I think that you're dead on that. I think more and more people are going to go analog, and they want to talk to people, and they want to have those relationships. But also, all right, let me just double check that's going on and use their tools. I see that a lot now, just in hospitality as well. But look, you've got a lot coming up. You know, I'm not asking for your 5-year plan, but what are you most excited about here? Maybe in the next year, 12 months, what's something that you're working on that you're excited about?
Okay. I mean, a couple of things I'll mention. Definitely the technology part, we're pretty excited in terms of the opportunities that it can bring us. We are working on some cool tech projects, which again are being done to enhance the experience of our advisors, who at the end of the day are our clients. We have the end client who's actually traveling, and then we have the client that is our network of advisors. So we're working on a couple of things there, and I think that's pretty exciting. We've got a team of people working on a couple of projects that relate to AI. The other thing I'm pretty excited about is that we've over recent years, you know, we've consolidated our presence in Latin America, specifically Mexico is a very strong market for us. We're looking at new markets across the Americas. We opened earlier this year and an opportunity came up, and we opened earlier this year in Paraguay. We're looking at Dominican Republic, Central America. And that's something that I'm quite focused on with the team. And we're looking forward to bringing our, I think, pretty unique model to different parts of Latin America.
I love it. So if somebody wants to become an advisor with Nuba, how do they do that? What would they have to do?
So they can contact us. They can contact me. They can contact my team. And we have a pretty rigorous process. We don't take just about anyone on the team. We have a couple of interviews. We really want to get to know the advisor to make sure that there's a cultural fit. We also want to make sure that if we're bringing someone on, that there's not going to be any cannibalization with existing clientele, with existing advisors. But if it's, if someone is out there, whether they're in Latin America or in the US, doesn't English speaking, Spanish speaking, does not matter. We can cater to both demographics, both nationalities, both languages. Well-traveled, well-connected, have a great personal social network in terms of their social circle, and they have a passion for travel, And at the same time, they're willing to put, you know, it's not easy. The amount of time you need to invest at the beginning to really get to know this industry, to get to know our systems, get to know how this works, get to know how to create a unique itinerary. It needs investment in terms of time. But if you tick all of those boxes, reach out to us. We have an amazing support team. We have great training. We have a few people on our training team. We have all of our, the training that we do in-house is video recorded. It's available on our intranet. And again, we have a great support team, you know, from product, marketing, IT, operations, finance. We have a cruise team, a visa team, an air desk. Or we have a lot of different teams in Nuba. And I think that our culture is very much based on service and hospitality. At the end of the day, like I said, the advisors are our clients, and we need to make sure for the end client to be happy, we need to make sure that our advisors are happy. So all of our infrastructure is really based on all of our operational platform is based on giving support to our advisors so they can do what they do best, which is building great itineraries and supporting their clients as best as they can.
Love it. All right. I only have two more questions. I know we're going on our time here and I could talk to you all day about travel, but are there some hot spots in the world now that you see people traveling more and more? Like, I'm ashamed to say I'm here in Miami too, and I haven't been to Mexico City. That's on my list. I've been talking about it for weeks now. I want to go there, but where are some of your clients in the high net worth range? Where are they trying to go to the most?
Well, it's good that you mentioned Mexico and Mexico City. I mean, if anyone's listening and hasn't been to Mexico City, including yourself, you should get there. This is an absolute
sign. I'm listening to you. I'm like, this is another sign. I got to get down there.
I'm privileged enough to have to go to Mexico City a couple of times a month. I lived there for 6-7 years. It's absolutely incredible what's happening in terms of how the city is evolving and the gastronomic scene, the culture, the art. It has something to offer everyone. I mean, but going back to your original question, definitely. I mean, over recent years, I think a lot of people have talked about it, but Japan has definitely been very hot, continues to be hot. But what I'm seeing, what we've been seeing, I guess, over the last 12 to 18 months or so is I think that our clients in general, who are obviously well-traveled, they've been to a lot of different parts of the world. They may have been to Paris 5-10 times, maybe to Rome 5-10 times. But I think that everyone is looking to travel a little bit slower than the way they were traveling before and looking to spend more time in different parts of the world. And one great thing that I'm seeing is that there's, you know, without going into specifics of where in the world, but I think in general, there's a trend of looking to go to secondary destinations more. So I still want to go to Paris. I'm traveling in and out of Paris, but I want to go to different parts of France and maybe I haven't visited before. I want to go to Normandy, or I want to go to Burgundy, or I want to go to the Champagne region, I want to go to Provence and spend more time there than I would have spent a few years ago. A week to 10 days and really get to understand the area, the culture, get to have that gastronomic immersion. And we're just seeing that in different parts of the world, even in Japan. Japan continues to be hot, but clients are wanting to spend time in different parts of Japan compared to where they would have gone a few years back. So more in Okinawa or Kanazawa, Hakone, so different places where they haven't been before and spending more time there. And we're seeing that as a trend generally across the world, whether that's in Asia, whether it's in Europe, or even closer to home in the Americas.
Yeah, you hit some of my hit list. My brother just got back from Japan, was raving about it. He said he was like culture shock coming back to the U.S. after being 3 weeks in Japan. He's like, what happened? This is, you know, it's very different.
Yeah, I mean, I was in a conversation with someone earlier this morning about Japan, and I think it's still the only developed country in the world that you can go to, and it's still very, very different from the rest of the world, right, from other developed countries. And I think that that's a great thing. I mean, the Japanese have protected their culture. There's still a lot of the historical and cultural facets of Japanese society from hundreds of years ago. You can still see in a very developed, very modern society and the economy today. And that's, I think that's great. And hopefully it continues to stay that way for the foreseeable future.
Yeah, he said something that stuck in my head here was that he had bought something to go, like some food, and a gust of wind came and blew all his napkins all over the place. And he's like, oh my God, we're trying to run to get napkins. And then all these people came to help him to clean up napkins. And then when he landed in New York, everyone's like, get out of the way. What are you doing? Move out of here. You know, so it's very different. And so that story kind of just sticks in my head of the different cultures and the respect people have for each other. But we could talk some more about that later. But for you, I have one last question, Mario. So if you could go back to young Mario, the management trainee, sitting at Lloyds Bank and whisper into his ear some advice about his career, what are you whispering into young Mario's ears?
I think I would say learn as much as possible where you are now. Things always work out. You don't know where you're going to be in 10 years' time, in 20 years' time. But while you're there where you're at today, just absorb as much as you can. Learn as much as you can from the people around you. Because whatever you learn today is going to be useful for you, whatever you choose to do later on in life. That's definitely been true for me. Again, like I said at the beginning, very grateful for the experience I had in banking and everything I learned. Grateful for the investment that the bank put into me. The time that I invested in it, I did not know where I would end up or the path my career, my life would take. But I see today how that time was extremely useful for me, and I learned things that I've brought to my work today, to my career today, and it's something I'm grateful for. So absorb, learn as much as you can, and develop those relationships that you have, whatever industry you're in, because they're going to be useful for you later on.
I love that. That's great advice for anybody. Listener, rewind that last minute. I think that's great advice. Well, Mario, look, I appreciate you joining me here today. You shared so much great information. Listeners, you hear it now. If you want to be in the travel industry and you like helping people and you want to create amazing experiences, make sure to contact Mario. You can look at nuba.com to check out all the things they've got going on. And then if you're a high net worth individual, there's no one better than Mario. Go call to make sure to start planning your trips here. But Mario, I appreciate you taking the time to join us today. Very grateful you spent this hour here with us. And look, we'll hopefully travel together here soon. Now that we're in Miami, we can at least get a coffee together.
Absolutely. Look forward to it. Thanks a lot for your time as well, Steve.
Absolutely.
This podcast is brought to you by Biscayne Coffee. Biscayne Coffee was founded with a giving spirit and a big idea: to enjoy delicious coffee roasted in Miami while helping save Biscayne Bay and the animals that live there. As a former food and beverage director, I can assure you these are some of the best quality beans on the planet. 10% of every coffee sold is donated to nonprofits to help preserve Biscayne Bay for all to enjoy. Visit BiscayneCoffee.com today and use promo code MENTOR at checkout to save 10% on your first order. Drink good coffee and create a good outcome.